101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app, Micah McCarty. In studio, Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault, along with Curtis Jackson, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's growth advisor, Orville Hall, joining us. Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming out. We appreciate you.
Good to be here. Always good to be here.
Appreciate you making time. We've got some exciting news. Mr. Hall, you've got to, you brought a little small binder here.
Yeah, a little.
I don't know that I've ever seen a binder that thick. Seriously, that's like, what, 10, 12 inches thick?
It's a little paperweight.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Carry it with me.
Mr. Hall, explain how 50 Cent chose Shreveport from the beginning.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't know, 50 did about 8 movies in Louisiana, but 3 based in Shreveport. I believe Blood in the Streets, Set Up, and Freelancers.
Did one with Val Kilmer.
And Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
And he calls him Val. So again, he's been here, and he's been here during the heyday of Shreveport. And I think Shreveport had many heydays. I think, you know, you just spoke about the heyday of
the Louisiana Hayride.
Yeah, the Louisiana Hayride. So, you know, and then in my research, I was fascinated with Captain Shreve and, you know, coming and finding blockage and deciding to stay around because he thought it was such a good place and unblocking it. I think this is sort of, sometimes things get reblocked, and, you know, in a different way.
Interesting.
And, you know, Martin Luther King said Shreveportians are peculiar people. and he said it in a good way, meaning that they are motivated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so 50 has been here, and he's seen the city, I think, in his words, at its best.
And your background is the music industry.
Yes, music industry originally, which I have a record that I produced in 86 that became the most sampled hip-hop record for hip-hop. And it started the genre of bounce music, which is unique to Louisiana. Hmm, okay. So you hear me many times when I talk and I say, this is God's plan. I'm just executing it because there's too many parts of it I can't take credit for. I make a record in 86. It starts bounce music in Louisiana. Now I'm living in Louisiana. And the credibility of that record also helped me to get artists to the city. And then music was a part of how I met Curtis. You know, in middle school, I was best friends with Jam Master Jay from Run DMC. We grew up in the same neighborhood. And he was the one that discovered Curtis. And he discovered Curtis at a time when, you know, it's public knowledge. You had a sort of rough childhood and upbringing. Mother passed away early in his life, and he took to the streets. But I met him when he himself made the choice to leave the streets. And I met him in Jam Master Jay's studio, a young guy in the corner, just writing rhyme. He didn't know. He knew he was clever enough to write the songs, but he didn't know how much bars is in a verse, how many bars is in a hook.
Sure.
And Jam Master Jay helped to teach him that. And so I met the guy that decided at that point he was going to be a success. Out of his mouth, he told a good friend of mine, when I blow up, you're going to carry my bags. Mm. And I remember it like yesterday.
What's his vision for Shreveport?
It's an economic vision. I think, you know, we were talking a little earlier, and I think he called me originally, right? I tracked him down, but again, we're friends. During the time I was here for 11 years doing my research, COVID happened. A few things happened that sort of put the brakes on anything even I could do. Had this great idea about Shreveport, COVID hits. So it took him a while to be able to come. But essentially when he came, you know, for me, you know, my premise of what I wanted to do in Shreveport actually came during COVID watching HGTV. You couldn't go outside. I don't know. I turned into an HGTV fanatic.
Right.
Like, and the Chip and Joanna Fixer Upper. You know, I was on downtown, you know, because I'm from New York, so I needed some sound. I needed to hear cars. I needed to hear something. They don't blow the horns out here, right. But at least I lived in, right.
Don't
next,
encourage them.
Yeah, right next to the bridge, so I could hear the traffic. And Festival Plaza has noise, and so I sort of moved there. And when he came down, he called about the tax incentive, the film tax incentive. Mm-hmm. Right. But I had already been watching the show. And from that one show, even during COVID, Waco, Texas, which has nothing on Shreveport, had 30,000 people visiting weekly to take tours of the Chip and Joanna's houses. And they became.
They've got a whole plaza.
Well,
downtown.
Well, they sort of backed into it.
Yes.
They backed into it. It was just a home improvement show that got so popular that it changed their
economy. They've created an entire industry in Waco.
At what point, Mayor, did the 50 Cent team come to the city and say, hey, you've got something we want. Can we work out a deal? How did that go?
I think the first thing, not very long after I came into office in early 2023, Orville contacted me and he said, would you be willing to meet with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson? And I said yes. Mm-hmm. And we met. We kind of hit it off. We had a private meeting, and then he had a larger still private meeting. But the first meeting was just Mr. Jackson and me and Steve Saba.
And he asked for what? Did he really ask at that point?
He didn't ask for anything. And so we had some subsequent discussions, and I sent a letter to Mr. Jackson that said, these are the things that I think we can do. And so that formed the basis for the transactions at both Millennium and at StageWorks. And we started working on that. We really kind of took it one step at a time. I'm a kind of a one step at a time person, incremental work, and every step got bigger. And what really happened, part of the delay was the vision and the ability to execute the vision kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so when it got bigger, it got more complicated. And as we ran into various issues, we had to address those issues, and we took them up one by one, and it resulted in a very successful series of transactions between the city and Mr. Jackson.
That leads us to where we are in 2026.
Mm-hmm. And we got more to go.
Yeah. Right.
We got more to go. I have, listen, a lot of people said, what do you have? You have faith in Mr. Jackson's vision. And I will tell you that the things that he said he wants to do, he brings about. And at every step, it hasn't just been pie in the sky. It's been pie in the sky plus execution. And he has put his own, of course, now he has a very nice grant from the state of Louisiana. But that only expanded what we can do. I mean, he's going to be more cash and investment into the downtown area than anybody has, I believe, ever. In the city of Shreveport.
Orville Hall, let me ask you, because there are those who are listening who will say, if that first lease for Millennium gave him 180 days to start work and it didn't start. And there are skeptics. You've heard them. You've seen them. And that never happened. Now we have a new lease. Explain the holdup and why we have had some delays.
Well, as Mayor Arsenault described, this happened pretty quick. Mayor Arsenault got elected. I contacted him. He was gracious enough to let us come in. He had the whole team, the second meeting, the whole team from the city. That didn't happen previously. And soon after the letter of intent, we came back and Curtis was interested and we started working on the lease. He went out on a 103 city tour, and I had to give him a call that the studio's flooded.
Okay.
Right? So right after the lease, the studio, it was 100-year rain,
mm-hmm.
and the first floor of the studio flooded. Severe enough that you're not going to put millions of dollars of equipment in the ground floor.
Right.
So, again, we went... It never, and I want everybody to understand it never stopped. As the mayor suggested, hurdles came and we jumped them one at a time. So the city had to begin to investigate first why it was flooding.
Okay.
Right? And remember, the building has been shuttered probably since 2016.
Right.
Right? So nobody was there to see the water mm-hmm. go in.
Gotcha.
And there's a beautiful complex right above it that in the construction of that may have changed the dynamic of the drainage.
We're going to take a break.
Yep. Yep.
Y'all going to stay with us.
Gotcha.
Lots more.
Orville Hall, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's growth advisor, Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault, in studio Mike and McCarty. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
In studio with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's growth advisor, Orville Hall, Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Mr. Hall, am I crazy that I remember in one of the very first presentations you guys did, there was a huge Ferris wheel down on the riverfront.
You were paying attention.
I remember correctly,
yeah,
right?
You do.
Is that still in the plans?
Well, what happens is, right, I'm here. And part of it was getting, because Curtis could be here today, and tomorrow I'll look on his Instagram and he's in Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
So you got to, he's a big guy. So I just took it upon myself to begin to just make renderings. And one of my goals is since I've been here, you know, in Atlanta has a great Ferris wheel. Different cities have this.
London has a huge one on the.
But what happens is it's just when you put it in front of a skyline, it just does something, the shape of it and those things, the shape of it. And so I've always said, and if my girlfriend was here, she would tell you, I said, when the Ferris wheel go up, my job is done.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that I'm not crazy.
Is our community prepared with the workers he's going to need? That's a concern you'll hear from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at LSUS has a Bachelor of Fine Arts now in digital arts. BPSI's got classes. Do we have the workforce that he's going to need for what's coming?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think a lot of people, no pun intended, because early in the morning, slept on Shreveport. Like, Shreveport has what it needs to be a great city. It just became underserved, right? We did Human Harmony. The dome was supposed to be here a month in advance. It got stuck in Kuwait. The owner of it had he owed some money. Curtis mm-hmm. had to pay for it to get it out. So he got here 9 days. I did a workforce a week before that with the Caddo American Workforce Center that works under community development at the time with Bonnie Moore. And we signed up 1,600 people. Thank God we did, because then the dome came 9 days before Human Harmony. And we had to do things like 1,000 sandbags and get that dome up, and we had enough people to get it up.
When will the permanent dome be done?
Where there's going to be two phases in that, and this it was part of this whole process to give timelines. What will be around the new dome, and it's a sphere similar to the Vegas sphere. Mm-hmm. What you saw at Human Harmony was a temporary dome. Like mm-hmm. this one is going to be more of the golf ball, really a global attraction. And we've partnered with Samsung So they're breaking out a technology that doesn't even exist
yet. Grant Nuckles told us that the brand new technology better than what's in Las Vegas now.
So Shreveport will have the first of this technology.
That's exciting. So
time frame on it?
So time frame, we're going to put a park, a green park around the dome first. So that's phase one, and that should be done by March of 2027, where you'll have the slab where the permanent dome would go, but also around it, concessions, bathrooms, beautiful space, because the timeline on Stageworks, which is right across from it, is earlier, more like November, television shows. So we want that park there to almost be attractive for what starts happening in Stageworks, right? Exciting. And then when that slab is up, then we put the new dome on phase two. So we're you know, I think Shreveport is, you know, stars are lining up, because you should see Bally's working on their property at the same time. So it's like, it's just like the stars are lining up.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a lot of good things happening. Mm-hmm. A lot of good things.
I want to find out about the Red River District and the other plans. We got a lot to talk about.
Reading my mind. Orville Hall, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's growth advisor, along with Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
We've got Orville Hall, Curtis Jackson's growth advisor in studio, Mayor Tom Arsenault joining us as well. And just real quick, Mr. Hall, you said something before, because Erin said, you know, she looked up in Atlanta, and it took
Tyler Perry
15 years to get his studio system to where it is.
From when he had his idea, it took over a decade.
So calm down, people.
Yeah.
It's happening. And you said something that I really appreciate. Enjoy the process.
Yeah. It's happening.
It's happening.
Right. So that's the first part, right? I get the
skepticism.
I get that part. And we've tried our best to stay in it. And if you look at the timeline, we've never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
We've never stopped. So again, but there's things sometimes, you know, we can't say we have to put the air purifiers in a building for 2 weeks, just so it's safe enough when people go in to breathe. You don't know what's been in there. If a building's been closed for 10 years, you know, we didn't help Curtis pick the buildings. You know, I brought him to the area because I knew it was important, because it was the gateway into the city.
What's he going to do with all those buildings he's bought downtown? What are some of the plans for turning them into A, B, or C? What are the
It's an entertainment. It's part of what the mayor and the city council and everybody supported. There was an existing entertainment district in that area that we were able to change to Curtis's area. So all of those buildings he bought is in that footprint.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the footprint of the gateway where most GPS will lead people to downtown Shreveport coming in Spring and Market. So right on Texas and Spring is where his first property starts.
Okay.
That's the first light people get to. And if you get to a light, imagine traveling 4 hours, usually asleep in the car. And when you feel the motion of the car stop, you pop up like,
mm-hmm.
Are we here? And so imagine him popping up, and the first look at a city are these buildings, right?
Okay.
So he picked those buildings because he knew he would be doing the city an injustice if people got off, like Tyler Perry's studio, to go see the studio but had to first ride through an area that wasn't its best.
Gotcha. Can you stick around?
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back. Orville Hall with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's growth advisor and Mayor Tom Arsenault in studio. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Kiel.
Tipton Jackson's growth advisor, Orville Hall, in studio. Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault, Mike and McCarty. Orville, I want to talk about, there's been a lot of discussion about the Red River District. We know his plans with the Millennium and Stageworks, but what about the Red River District? Where do you see him taking that?
Well, it's the Red River District is essential to the plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's central to the entertainment district area. And it's the beautiful place to eat, to walk. That particular section is open container, so you could even get your drink, come sit outside and people watch. So the Red River District is very important to the plan. For Human Harmony, we brought in two high-level restaurants, Say Less from New York and Lagos, both. But, you know, again, we're working with the city now. Having conversations about how to develop it in a way that it will take the burden off the city and give us the ability to then bring in other partners.
Let me ask the mayor about that, because that would be are we going to sell it to Curtis 50 Cent Jackson? Would we lease it? What is in the best interest of the city with regard to that?
We're still negotiating what that might look like. I think we'll probably reach some kind of an arrangement, but that's still a little bit open.
For his team to run the district in some capacity?
No, right. We do not know if that will be the case or not.
Okay.
We're currently discussing leases on some empty buildings.
Okay. Hmm. Orville, you're having Curtis 50 Cent Jackson in town for a big event this week that is open to the public. Is that right?
Yes, that's what it is. Actually, we're not sending any official invitations to any city officials. They're part of the citizens, too, so we're not saying don't come. But we're billing this one as G-Unit, Curtis Jackson, and the public. And it will be the, you know, again, a lot of what we couldn't talk about, you know, in this big book I mm-hmm. brought, there's a lot of NDAs in here.
Yes.
Right? That you can't talk about at certain times. So if you notice, I haven't spoken to anybody through the process. I haven't went to any news. We wanted to get through the process. We presented the plan to EDC, the Economic Development Corp. That meeting was to release the funds of the monies that would flow down for mm-hmm. revitalization. So now that we got that done and everything is in order, we want to let the public know what's happening.
So when and where is that meeting?
On Wednesday, the doors open at 4:00. And this is especially for the skeptics,
mm-hmm,
right? So I'm at the right place.
Yes.
I'm at the right place. You'll see the same information that we gave to
and
the
where?
State.
Where's the meeting?
It will be at the Shreveport Convention Center inside the exhibit halls. And it starts at, the doors open at 4:00. The presentation with Curtis. It's going to be a fireside chat. We have questions that we'll pose to him that aligns with the timeline. And then we're going to have a QR code where the audience can send some questions in and we can answer those too. And so the doors open at 4:00, presentation starts at 6:00. So get there, because once the presentation starts, doors are closed.
Okay.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
When we're looking at Millennium Studios or G-Unit, going to be G-Unit Studios.
Yes.
Stageworks, the Dome, he's already purchased several properties along Texas and throughout downtown. What kind of jobs, how many jobs do you think are going to be created once this is up and ginning and everything's going? Local people that are going to be put to work.
Right. Well, again, our vision is this. Just like Vegas, God willing, we do this right. To me, the citizens of the Shreveport's population is 187,000, right? It's the perfect city to where the workforce, the citizens become the workforce for the amazing tourism. So for me, the number you're talking about is employment.
Mm-hmm.
And with everything that we're bringing to the table, we need, it's going to be thousands of people. And then at the same time, movies are going to be being made. So when this whole machine is moving, look at a television show. People are in the restaurant and elevators. You got two stars, but you have to have people all around. Mm-hmm. So the idea is even the extra work. So I would hate to put a number because I don't think I can. The vision we have for this is that the people of Shreveport become the workforce for an amazing tourist-driven.
Because you've got electricians, you've got everything, set constructors,
catering,
all kinds.
How soon? If you're talking to someone who's been very skeptical,
right?
How soon do you anticipate we will have cameras rolling, production going in Shreveport?
Well, again, as I said, his production team is here now to film a documentary here in Shreveport, right? The first building we're going to tackle is StageWorks, which will become G Stage Arena. We've partnered with Samsung. It's going to be lit up like downtown Korea, LEDs from top to bottom all the way around. That building we're going to also use as what they call fast track television, audience television. He has an idea to do Put Me On 50, like America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
So that building we hope to have done by November. Late November of this year. And then that way, those type of films, well, not films, but production, the easy audience-based productions, because he wants to start there, because those kind of productions bring thousands of people to the city, like America's Got Talent.
Non-scripted.
So we're filling hotels. We're filling. At the same time, we're working on Millennium, and that's a longer timeline. The volumetric stages, the high level equipment. So then the TV and movies come in, but right away, you're going to see some work starting once we finish StageWorks. Mm-hmm. And now that all of this is moving, we're moving towards getting that building done and putting up those type of...
We got to take one last break.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the events that he's going to be having around the community, because that's part of the state deal. Can we talk about that when we get back?
Orville Hall and Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault in studio. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Q.
Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Mayor Tom Arsenault in studio with Orville Hall, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's growth advisor. Mayor, you just made a great point talking about bringing people in. Yeah, we want to put people to work here, but we want to grow the city as well.
Correct. We've had some population loss, and so projects like this are a great means of bringing people back in. Many of the creatives that populate these kinds of jobs like living in the older part of town. So it's a great opportunity to repopulate some of our neighborhoods that need repopulation.
That's a great point.
Orville Hall, the state contract requires that G-Unit host 26 events a year at the facilities that he's going to be operating in. That clock's ticking.
Right.
Do we have a list of events that we've scheduled?
No, because first the buildings have to sort of be moving.
Okay.
But again, since we've been here, it's not only been his mind is not just on it first was on the film business.
Mm-hmm.
His main business. He called about the tax incentive. He saw that right away, training classes. So we're working on the property will have the Ethics Center, which will be a place where we bring in training and students and create, when the boss participates, you can create unique things that no one has. I've been in
This forum on Wednesday could be considered an event.
You're hosting an event.
Yeah. One of the 26.
But different things is like he went and visited the juvenile justice building, right? So maybe boxing.
Sure.
Right? We went and visited the Biz Camp, right? So we just finished that program, but it's young entrepreneurs, middle schoolers.
Right.
He sponsored that. So the programs will come out of these things. Like, nothing will be separate of the goal of economic change.
Lastly, our last minute, Humor and Harmony. Are we going to do that again this year? What's the plan?
No, not this year.
Okay.
Not this year. And because, again, Bally's is about to go into construction now. Our goal is to help Shreveport grow its tourism so that Bally's Hotel is very important to the next Human Harmony. Mm-hmm. So we're having conversations with Bally's. We're actually working sort of together on both plans to say this is what it can look like. And as soon as we know their plans, then we'll plan the next Human Harmony. Okay. But we got work to do.
Sure.
And I want everybody, again, like I said, enjoy the process. Like, enjoy seeing these new LEDs go up and go come downtown and watch. It's a process, but think about it. For the last 20 years or so, some of these buildings haven't seen what's about to happen.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. Thank you so much for coming
out.
Thank
you.
And we look forward to having you out again very soon.
And again, all the skeptics that you spoke about, come Wednesday, 4 o'clock. Shreveport Convention Center, and see the big book.
Mayor, thank you also.
Thank you both.
My pleasure.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. Mike and McCarty. Thank you for spending a little time with us this morning on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton joining us. Keith, good morning, sir.
Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Thank you for jumping on with us this morning. A subject I'm sure you're probably weary of discussing, but we got to kind of go over it. Teacher pay raise. Now, the legislature voting today.
No, they're voting by mail.
By mail.
Well, the deadline is the 23rd, so that's kind of where we are
on that. So they're voting now.
They're voting right now.
So some are voting today.
Now, you're right.
They'll be sending it in. But basically what the governor wants is for each parish to take money from their budget that's already allocated and implement these stipends. What's going to be cut from Caddo Parish School budget?
Yeah, what really changed the entire dynamics of the whole conversation was what the governor released yesterday. He put out a social media post that basically just said that any district that had provided a pay raise or a stipend that was equivalent to what he was proposing, which was $2,000 for classroom teachers or $1,000 for support staff, that we met the intent of the executive order. We have worked with our legislators because, you know, we began, as we said months ago, we've been planning to present the budget that the board's going to vote on tonight. We've been planning this for months. And a part of that is a 6% across the board pay raise for all staff. Well, then the executive order came out. And so immediately with the executive order, we started asking lots of questions because really you're looking at three different possible pay scenarios. You've got Caddo Parish proposing a 6% across the board. We also were in conversations with our board, and one of our board members has made a recommendation that we also are going to provide a stipend for our employees that any that have a starting salary below $30,000 will receive one time $1,500 plus any above $1,000. And now you've got a third initiative here that came from the governor's order. And so what we are asking, and we have asked our local delegates to get clarity, every one of them are coming back saying after conversations with leaders in the Senate and House, as well as the governor's office and the attorney general's office, that we've met the intent of his executive order. So now what we have shifted to, instead of opposing it, because we don't want to oppose, we're for teacher pay. That's why we added it in our budget. Now we are just pushing for written clarification and some protections, because it's not just Caddo. DeSoto Parish just passed this past, I think, a week ago, a 6.8 across the board pay raise. Well, they're also going to meet that threshold. Mm-hmm. And so the governor did clarify yesterday. Unfortunately, he clarified it in a social media post. And I just hate to hang my hat on Facebook
right,
rather than something a little more legal. So that's kind of where we are right now.
So it looks like you will have met what the governor wants to accomplish. Because I was worried that if his action passed, that you might actually have to cut your proposed pay raise to give the stipend. I mean, so that's kind of a moot point now. We hope.
Well, it's a semi moot point, I think, until we get something other than Facebook. But we have gotten the assurance, and regardless, we can go forth with a 6 point across the board pay raise. I feel very comfortable with our ability. Again, we were going to do that regardless. What we will do is delay the one-time stipend just as a measure of security protection, that in case it is delayed or, he is going to change his mind, then we will have those funds to be able to meet the requirement if he says we have to do that. And I just think that's being prudent with tax dollars, because we certainly don't want to back ourselves into a corner, a financial corner, that we can't get out of.
Okay, let me ask you, because this has been mentioned by, I think, at least one board member who has suggested maybe a 6% increase for all is not the way to go. Maybe the folks that make over $100,000 should get a lesser percentage. Is that something you looked at? Is that feasible?
Yeah, we did look at that. And, I think anytime you're talking about salaries, and, the elephant in the room is my salary or anyone else who's at kind of an executive level in the district, it is an elephant in the room. But our goal from day one is really not looking at just optics. And, of course, we are in election season, which optics we know play a part. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do is really align salaries to what the market demands. And I think if you look at, I gave the example in last month's board meeting of, I was interviewing someone who was at a supervisor's level from another district who was a top quality candidate that I wanted to bring in to lead one of our areas. But even with coming in at a higher position, she was still going to lose money. And she was coming in from, again, a regional district. So that's, talking about salaries are never comfortable, but we always want to make sure that we are aligning ourselves with what does the market show, and not just try to give a one-time stipend or a flat dollar adjustment.
Another elephant in the room for me and for some who talk to me about it is that we have lost students. Our student population is declining. You've talked to us about right-sizing the district and, do we have too many employees? Have you made headway on that? Have we lowered our staff numbers as we have lowered the student populations?
Boy, that's such a, that's a battle I always fight, because there's such this mythology out there that we are so heavy at the top. And as I said I'm so proud of what our staff was able to do. We moved 56 positions out to schools this past year, and we don't get to the point in a general fund budget where you're able to give a 6% raise unless you have adjusted what makes up 85-86% of your budget, and that's people. Mm-hmm. And so we've reorganized central office to a much more leaner, much more efficient, supportive role. We have shifted as many positions as needed to schools, and not that we have to do what's needed, and very proud of that. But also, Aaron, to your point around population shift, one of the things that I think we should be proud of with the work we're doing is we've kind of stabilized some enrollment. We're not seeing the vast declines that we have in the past, But the other thing, we receive MFP dollars based upon enrollment. Mm-hmm. So it's not like that we're getting a static revenue source regardless of what enrollment does. It is a per pupil allocation. And so as populations have declined, so have funding. And because of that, we've made sure that we have budgeted appropriately, so we're good stewards of taxpayers' dollars.
Okay. Final vote on the budget expected today. We'll be watching. We appreciate your time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you all. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Keith.
All right, bye-bye.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Coming up, Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault is going to join us in about 20 minutes, sharing some memories of former Mayor John Hussey, who recently passed away. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
You got out of here yesterday before me.
Mm-hmm. I had to go see the doctor, yeah.
Did you beat the...
I did. I got home before it came, but I heard it. It was loud.
I'm glad you made it before.
Whoo.
It was rough out there.
I left, I guess, about 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right in the middle,
right about when the bottom
beast.
Fell out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was going up, and I want to apologize to whoever was stranded on Centenary, kind of right past Olive as you're heading south.
Mm-hmm.
And because I went, and Ruben, you made a comment. You said, if you just kind of get going, don't stop.
Yeah, don't take your foot off the gas.
And so there was no way around it, and I was like, okay, I'm committed at this point.
You got to keep going.
I didn't blast through it at 50 miles an hour,
right.
But I didn't stop. And the car that was in the middle of Centenary started bobbing in the water.
It was floating. It had drowned.
I was like,
They want to kill you today.
And I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
So
you had to keep going.
It's like, wow.
Because you're in a big pickup. We need to say
Well, I was in a 4Runner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was in the 4Runner.
Okay.
So it was still high up off the...
Right.
It wasn't four-wheel drive, but it's still higher up than a small car.
There were people, Uri, at East Washington that were, up to the... almost to the roof of their cars yesterday. It got, and also I got sent video from Millennium Studios, had water again.
And not just a little drip with a bucket.
No, there's
water
inside the building. And the building almost nearly surrounded by water. So they got a problem to fix down there. Because if I'm Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, I'm not moving in million-dollar digital equipment.
No.
Into a building that's continuing to flood. And, last time was the 100 years flood. Well, are we going to have 200 years floods in a year? I don't know. But the mayor did tell me they're working on it. They're working on a solution to make sure that it's draining. So they are absolutely trying to get that problem solved.
Shreveport Mayor John Hussey, former Mayor John Hussey, 92 years old. Just recently passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I used to see him pretty regularly at Strawn's, like on Saturday mornings. Not so much as recently, but he has been out and about.
I've seen him at the gym.
Yeah.
As recently as 2 months ago. So, yeah. Love that man.
He was a very nice, very nice man.
I moved here in 1984 as a green 21-year-old reporter, and he was mayor. And there has never been, and I have to tell a John Hussey story later because he was in the studio when something dramatic happened, but never more friendly. Helped me so much. I have such fond memories. Anyway.
And we're going to have Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault in about 10 minutes share some memories of former Mayor John Hussey.
Yeah.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault joining us right after the break talking about memories of former Mayor John Hussey. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Haven't spoken with him in such a long time. I'm glad to get him on the phone.
I know. Finally, yeah.
Good morning.
Mayor, good morning. Mayor John, former Mayor John Hussey, just recently passed away, age 92. He was the first mayor under the then new mayor city council form of government.
Actually, he was the second mayor. Bill Hanna was the first.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. Well, then the report I saw got it wrong.
Yeah, because he was elected in 1980, right?
A lot of people forget that we had two really big contributors in the early years of our new form of government, and Bill was mayor from 78 to 82. John was on the council, on that first council, and then John became mayor from 82 to 90.
I moved here in 84. He was mayor at the time. I don't know that I've ever met him a more gracious. I was a 21-year-old little green little reporter. He was just a kind soul. As the best way to describe him.
Yeah, John's personality would cause you to think that he didn't have any, that he was very quiet. And so you sometimes don't associate a quiet person with aspects of leadership. But John was very much a leader. He led by what he did and by his vision and his real commitment to service to the people of Shreveport.
You served on the council during the years he was mayor, in 82, I believe, to 90 as well. So you worked closely with him.
I did.
And those were some turbulent times in our community. We had, gangs. We had a riot in Cedar Grove. We had lots of struggles, but we were flooded. We were doing good money-wise. What were the biggest struggles that you saw him face?
Well, we really had a real... Our two terms were very, very different. The first term, we were flush with cash, and we got to say yes to everybody,
right.
Basically. In the second term, the price of oil dropped from $40 a barrel to $10 a barrel, mm-hmm. In a period of about 120 days. Lumber prices dropped, and so we went through a serious recession. And so between 86 and 90 is when we learned a lot about government, because we had to make some very difficult budgetary decisions that affected services and those kind of things. So we learned a lot about government in that second term. And John handled both of those circumstances exceptionally well. He was very good at setting priorities. He managed to get funding for things like the Clyde Fan Parkway and to do that streetscape downtown. John was just he was a real visionary, and then he was also tough enough to make difficult priority decisions when federal revenue sharing stopped, which was a very significant blow to our budget. And like I say, he really was a thoughtful leader. John always thought what was the right thing to do, and then he would figure out what was the political thing to do to bring that about so that the right thing became the right decision.
Mayor, I know you stayed in touch with Mayor Hussey, former Mayor Hussey. Did you ever seek counsel as mayor?
Oh, yes. I sought counsel several times. I remember in particular, as I got into the role, but I've been in the office a month or two, and I realized that I needed some mentoring on who to see, how to structure my day. And so I took John to lunch. Actually, I intended to take John to lunch. He ended up taking me to lunch. And we sat down, and he recommended a book that he said was kind of his guide to how to manage his position. It was a book that is by management guru Peter Drucker, and it's called the Effective Executive. And so I immediately, if John said that was the book to read, I went and got it, and that has helped me a lot in setting my daily schedule as mayor. But I met with John several times, called him on occasion when I was, you know, trying to figure out how to address a particular problem. And John had a very keen political insight as well as a very keen policy insight. And people didn't always see that in John, because he was a very quiet, he had a very quiet personality. But make no mistake about it, we have lost a lion in Shreveport.
Do you know anything, and you may not be able to share, but he was out and about as 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the circumstances of his death that you can share? The family.
No, I've had some very brief text exchanges with his son Brennan, who is a friend, but I just left that. Left that to them. I'm sure some of those details will come out. I think he had been in rehab. He had a fall while several months ago, and I did notice the last time I was at the symphony. I know where John C. is, and I noticed that he was not there in that conservatory.
Mm.
Well, he was 92.
What a long life. I remember when we were talking about the Clyde Fant Parkway, and the discussions were hot and heavy on that. And little known, we don't realize it today, but there was a hot and heavy debate about keeping billboards off of that roadway. And John was in the middle of saying he wanted that to be a green space thoroughfare. And so when you drive on the Clyde Fant Parkway today and you don't see billboards for lawyers or whoever, it's because of John Hussey. He led that charge, correct?
He did. He did. You know, John was, when John believed something, he was very firm. And most of the time I was with John on those occasions. When I wasn't with John, I felt his influence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing was the Cedar Grove riots of 1988. I cannot explain to you enough how his calm demeanor during that tumultuous time, I was in awe just watching him as a young reporter. I thought, man, he brought the community together. It was a tough time. But he led that effort to kind of bring our city back. I'm sure you saw that too.
Well, I did, and it really is a lesson for any mayor. It is certainly a lesson for me, and that is when you have a crisis in your community, whatever it is, it's very important that the mayor remain cool, calm, and collected, because a mayor can either incite further difficulties, mm-hmm. or can begin, okay, what are our issues? What do we need to focus on? How do I go about focusing on it? What's the first step? What's the step after that? And John was methodical in that, and his calm, I can tell you that John did have the ability to get angry, but you never saw his anger on the outside.
Nope.
He always maintained his composure, and as a result of that, things that didn't go well didn't go as badly as they would have had he been an inciting kind of person.
Mm-hmm. And looking at from an outside in, when you were on the council, I watched how he got along with all the council members, no matter what the background. He worked with them. He tried to compromise. He tried to meet them where they were. That to me was, in looking back at it, you know, some 40 years later, I'm like, you know what? He really did try hard to work with everyone.
Well, he realized that the best way for the city to progress is for the mayor and the council to act as a team for the city. Now, teams have the ability to have disagreements, mm-hmm. but they all ought to realize that they're on the same team, and it's very important to move the city in a positive direction. We have to be in agreement on the basic things and act as a team. Now, the council's role is sometimes as a check and balance with the power of the mayor, but the mayor needs to recognize the role of the council, and the council needs to recognize the role of the mayor. John was very firm about that. When he protected the office of the mayor, not himself. but he protected the office of the mayor to make sure that the way that the government operated was the way the people intended for it to operate when they passed the new form of government in 1978.
Yep.
Shreveport lost a lion.
You bet.
I like that. Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate your input.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you soon. Mike and McCarty. Okay. Coming up, State Rep Michael Mellering going to talk about the teacher pay raise vote coming up after the news top of the hour. 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Let me tell a quick John Hussey story.
You go right ahead.
Because it's, again, moved here, 21 years old, 1984. He's mayor. I'm in charge of, I'm assigned to cover city government. So I go to all the meetings. He was just so gracious.
And that's back in the day when you took a tape recorder and you went to the meetings.
Yeah, a cassette recorder. You recorded the whole meeting on cassette. Yes. And then, don't even get me started on that. God, how that's changed. But this was when the city council met in the old police station.
Right.
This was before they moved to Government Plaza. Yeah. So anyway, and the mayor was very willing to come join us on the air. We had a Sunday night show. Forget what the name, Party Line. I forget what the name of it was. And he came. He was in the studio. He was sitting right where you are right now. Different furniture, obviously. And I'm sitting in the middle of the room and hosting the show. And he's answering questions, and bad weather's moving through. And at the time, this was KWKH. We went out and covered, bad weather. Well, now we're under a tornado warning. Tornado warning's coming.
Right.
I've got Mayor John Hussey sitting in the room with me, and he says, can I use your phone real quick? And so we're in a break, and I passed him this before cell phone, so I scooched the phone over toward him, and he picked it up, and he called Mimi, his wife. And he told her, hey, honey, sweetheart, there's a tornado warning. I need you to, take cover. Here's where I'm at the radio station. I'll be home as soon as I can. But I got to stay and finish the show or whatever it was. He could have up and left and gone home but he didn't want to drive in the tornado warning. But I will never forget that moment. Jumps back on the air. We talk about, hey, we're going to shift gears now. We are under tornado warning. And we're sitting 3 feet apart. And he was so calm. But he wanted to make sure that his wife, Mimi, was okay and checked on her first. And once found out she was okay and safe, he went about doing his business. And, he and Mimi showed up at my wedding. They attended my wedding a few years later. And I thought, wow. I mean, that's how much he cared about people around him. He didn't have to come to this dumb little new reporter's wedding, but he did.
Yeah.
Because I still have the bowl that they bought. I'm sure Mimi bought it, but may she rest in peace, too. But they're together now. And, man, I have such warm thoughts of him. Such warm. What a great mayor. And what a great man.
I only met him a few times. Always gracious. Always so kind.
Saw him at the forum for the when Tom Arsenault was running for mayor at the Y. He showed up.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting in the audience.
Yeah.
Watching to see, who he's going to vote for.
Yeah.
And I thought, he was still active into his 90s. Just an amazing man, responsible for so much in our community.
Coming up, State Rep Michael Mellering going to join us talking about the teacher pay raise vote after the local news. 1017 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. State Rep Michael Mellering joining us. Michael, good morning. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, Governor Landry has issued an executive order saying teacher pay raise. They have to have a $2,000 at least a stipend. Caddo Parish, we talked with Keith Burton, and they've proposed a 6% pay raise in the budget. How are you going to be voting on this executive order for the governor? Because I think we're covered.
Yeah, and so I already voted. Just to let everybody know, I voted yes. And Superintendent Burton and I spoke yesterday exactly about what you just raised. And I want to applaud him and the school board, first off, for doing this, for acknowledging our teachers are very important and the backbone of the education system, and for them seeing that and finding a way to give them a raise.
There is questions about, I think DeSoto's given a raise. I think Bossier may have done one last year. What's the timing on if you've given a raise, since what date do you meet this criteria? There's a little bit confusion about that.
Yes, you're right. There is some confusion. That's exactly what Superintendent Burton and I spoke about yesterday. And we had a conversation with the governor yesterday about this as well. For DeSoto and for Caddo, who have announced that they've not done it, or they will implement for the upcoming school year, but have not done it yet, they're satisfied. So essentially, if you didn't have it last year, but you're doing it next year, then you're covered, mm-hmm. is the gist of it.
Okay. So essentially, Caddo will not have to cut their budget. They can give the raise that they were planning to give and then move on. So that this will be a permanent raise rather than a stipend. And is that something you support? I mean, I know you hear from teachers all the time, stop giving us stipends, give us a real raise.
Yeah, look, I think that the permanent raise, to answer your first question, yes, I support Caddo Parish School Board giving their teachers a permanent raise. When it comes to the state, I think what we need to do is exactly what we're doing. We're looking going forward at the MFP, which is the state formula and how the state funds local school districts. That needs to be addressed. We have not looked at that since the early 90s. And when we looked at it in the early 90s, it was more of a tweak. So realistically, we've not had a comprehensive review and potential change in addressing where we're at as a state funding local education in more than 30 years, probably closer to 50 years. We need to do that.
What would you like to see different from the MFP funding?
That's what we need to look at. So right now, we fund, there's multiple levels. Level one is the funding per pupil. Mm-hmm. If you talk to most school systems, that has not been changed, or that has not had money added to it in a very long time. And if you look around the country, most states, when they're funding their education systems at a local level, are funding at that per pupil basis. So to explain it, that means this. If the state gives you X amount of dollars, say it's $5,000 for every student you have in your system, that's level one. So if your population goes up, you get more funding. If your population decreases, you get less funding. Louisiana has that, but most of the funding is not there. Most of the funding is in these other levels. Levels 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's baked in no matter what. So if your population explodes, you don't necessarily get more funding at those levels. And if your population collapses, you don't get any less funding. So that's where some of those inefficiencies, and most of the inefficiencies are. And that's what we need to look at, is that's things such as English language learners. You've heard a lot of people talk about, we fund English language learners at a much higher level than other students. So that's something that we need to look at. Also, you need to look at your special education students. Are they getting enough? Are they not getting enough? It's all of those different things, not just your normal, this is the student population count, that we need to go in and determine, is this the best use of the state tax dollars?
The other question that is raised with regard to the governor's executive order and you know, demanding the stipend be paid is, at what's the happy medium for how the state tells us each district how to spend their money? You send the money per pupil, and then for the most part, the districts determine how to spend the money. Some are saying this might be state overreach. You would disagree, I guess.
I think in the short term, look, we, as a state legislature, for the past 2 years, we've given the population the opportunity to approve a state, like a teacher pay raise. It failed. At this point in time, on a one-year basis, we're coming in and saying, look, this failed at the ballot twice. We're trying to keep the teachers from having that stipend that they've received the past 3 or 4 years, no longer received for this year. And this was the solution that the governor and the speaker and everybody came up with. We're voting on it as a legislature. I support it personally. I don't think this is a long-term solution, but I think for 1 year, this is the best shot that we have at doing this.
So you think it'll pass? It needs a two-thirds majority.
It does. Right. It needs a two-thirds majority. Talking to colleagues, a lot of them are supportive of it. Whether we get to that two-thirds, look, a lot of people, especially in your rural communities, have questions about the impact it's going to have on them. And I know those conversations are being had right now. But to go back to Caddo, once they said you're fine with having that 6% that you've already announced covered it, and it wasn't going to result in any, for this year, any negative impact on Caddo Parish, I'm fine with it for Caddo Parish.
The other problem with it is the timing, because most of these school districts are passing their budget right now, and this would change their budget dramatically, like on June 24th, well, a week before these new budgets go into effect. That's a little bit of a struggle for a lot of these parishes, correct?
It can be, yeah. Look, to acknowledge it, yeah, that could be a struggle for some of these parishes. I know LDOE is working with a lot of the school systems, especially the ones that have expressed concerns. But yeah, to acknowledge it, yeah, that is a potential issue for some school districts.
Well, you expect then that you guys will start working on legislation next year to address the MFP funding and a restructuring of that, it sounds like?
It's coming probably next month. It's going to start. Around the same time, the governor issued an executive order for the teacher stipend. We passed a joint resolution of the House and Senate to put together a task force of stakeholders from not just the legislature, but also from DOE and local school systems and other stakeholders to look at the formula and to see what we can do to modernize it and to update it and to make sure that essentially we're getting the best bang for our buck, that we're not wasting money. It's a $4 billion piece of the budget, almost $5 billion piece of the budget. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and pretty substantial.
We need to make sure that we're not wasting it. Yeah, we need to make sure that we're not wasting this because, look, from the time that I was on BSEE, so go back 5 years, until now, we went from 49th in education to 32nd. That's not by happenstance. That was the result of a lot of hard work from everybody, from the legislature down to local school boards and especially teachers. And we need to make sure that whatever we do, we don't hinder those results, because right now what we're seeing is looking in Northeast Louisiana at META. META just announced that they're starting basically a CTE program that trains individuals and guarantees them a job, a good paying job. We have industry coming. We have the data centers here, whether you agree with them or not, they're coming here right now, and they're going to need an educated workforce. And that educated workforce isn't necessarily somebody that went to a four-year college. It's somebody that can go to high school, get out of high school, and go straight to work, making a good salary. But in order to do that, we have to have a student population that can read, that can do basic math, and that is starting. We're starting to see that now in Louisiana, and we're going to continue that. Now, we can't take away the funding, and we can't take away the opportunities from those students that we've given them in the past 5 years. So that needs to be the North Star. Whatever we do is to make sure that we improve outcomes for students.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. We'll keep in touch, because this is going to be interesting to watch.
It is. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Michael. State Rep. Michael Mellorine. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710keel.
Well, I don't think we're going to get what we got yesterday.
Thank goodness.
Good.
No kidding.
Gosh. That was incredible.
The deluge.
And I was right in the middle of it. It was like when I left here, I was like, okay, it's raining.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize how much had already come down.
Yeah.
And wow. And some of these, the systems the drainage systems, like through Broadmoor, mm-hmm. and that. Did you see there was a video going through Betty Virginia Park?
Yes,
it looked like a Colorado Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously,
it really did. It was unbelievable. I got sent video from a lot of different places. One that was a little disturbing: Millennium Studios.
Yeah,
water surrounding the building, water in the building.
Now we thought remediation had taken place.
Yes,
and solved those issues. Apparently not.
Apparently not.
There was a lot of water came down yesterday.
City folks were there in the building. Orville Hall and I talked yesterday. He was down there. He saw it. They're working on both a short and long-term solution for that to make sure. Because I guess if you're the owner of the property and you have repeated flooding issues that you know about, that you know, I don't know who's responsible. We've signed the lease.
Right.
Now, are they responsible when it floods?
That was my question. Yeah. Does the city go, hey, your problem, you signed the lease? I would certainly hope not. I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't think so either. I think the city wants to make good on that because, yes, we knew there were flooding issues before. And you would think that, you know, when you sign the new lease,
well,
you've said we've taken care of that.
Right. When the lease was signed with the understanding it's been fixed.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did get a statement from the mayor saying, yes, we are working on both short and long-term solutions for that. Because if I'm Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, I'm not moving in multi-million dollar equipment pieces into that building if it still gets water in it.
Aaron, I'm not moving in $10 pieces of equipment.
Right, right.
With the flooding that, because it wasn't just drips with a bucket in there.
No,
you sent me that video and it was like, okay, this is water running through the building.
Yeah, it's just not good. And they got to figure out, A, where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Is there a backlog in some ditches we need to clean out? Do we need a better drainage system? Do we need a pumping system around the building? What do we need? We got to figure that out because this is a multi-million dollar building. We've got to protect it. We own it.
Right.
It's still you and me own this building.
Right.
We got to protect it.
Hey, does that mean I can go in anytime I want?
Not quite.
I own it.
Not quite.
I'm part owner.
Mm-mm.
I'm a Shreveport taxpaying citizen.
Can't go whenever you want. Not how it works. Not how it works. I do see some apartment complexes for sale, by the way.
Oh,
if you want to buy some apartment complexes, we'll tell you about those when we get back.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Hold on, I'm clicking on this link.
Mm-hmm. It's okay to click.
I want to buy. Oh, look at there. I can buy the Best Western Plus.
No, you need to put Shreveport in the search.
Steeplegate Inn for $1.5 million.
Put Shreveport in the search box and then you'll come up with...
Why didn't you just do that for me beforehand?
I told you that. You didn't listen. What we have here,
is a failure to communicate.
The Villa Norte apartments are on the auction block right now.
Villa Norte apartments,
mm-hmm.
redevelopment and repositioning opportunities.
$1. $1.
What a bargain.
Starting bid. Forest Oaks apartments, David Raines Road.
Look at this picture.
$1. Starting bid. I'm trying to sell them. Okay, let's sell them. Great apartment complexes in Shreveport. Here's another one. The Lord. Linwood Homes on Bernstein. $1.
Okay,
$1.
Take the logo down. They're not. You can't see the part. Oh yeah.
The other one, the Pines Apartments. Now, this is on Line Avenue. Starting bid on these is $200,000 if you want to buy those apartments. Now, I said, why don't you go buy one of these? And you're like, well, what'll happen? And I said, well, the day after you buy them, you'll start getting blighted notices from the city.
Yeah.
You'll and
start
fines.
To have to pay fines. Yeah. They'll fine you every day.
Every day you're going to have to pay a fine. So your $1 investment might cost you a lot of money. But do you think anybody buys these? You think anybody is going to bid? I mean, the bidding ends in a day.
I got a buck on me.
Linwood Homes.
Why don't you go buy the Villa Norte apartments, Ruben, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
I'm too scared. I'm too scared. I don't want to run people off.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay fines. So no.
How much money would you have to sink into these to make them viable again?
God, so much money.
So
more
much
than
money.
A dollar.
Yeah, lots of money.
Between
so anyway,
the fires bid and the $1.
The squatters and the
everything else.
Good Lord.
Yeah, they're trying to sell them. We'll see if there are any takers, but you know, we'll see. They're on the auction block. The bidding ends in about a day. So good luck. Hope they sell
them.
So
when this says $1 starting bid, does that mean that's where they are right now?
Probably. I would guess. There's nobody going to buy that. You're buying a ton of headaches.
Bid $5 as a joke, and then you end up winning.
You're the owner. Congratulations. Yeah. You now own the Villa Norte Apartments.
Whoa. Oh, I didn't mean it. No,
yeah,
no.
Exactly.
No.
Put your bid in. Let's see what happens.
Okay. Hold on. Aaron McCarty.
No.
What's your debit card number in there?
Put your own in there, dang it. Oh, anyway. Yeah, they're trying to get owners. We'll see.
We talked with Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton earlier this morning on the teacher pay raise. Hear what he's got to say right after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. Thank you for spending a little time with us this morning on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton joining us. Keith, good morning, sir.
Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Thank you for jumping on with us this morning. A subject I'm sure you're probably weary of discussing, but we got to kind of go over it. Teacher pay raise. Now, the legislature voting today.
No, they're voting by mail.
By mail.
Well, the deadline is the 23rd, so that's kind of where we are
on that.
So
they're voting now.
They're voting right now.
So some are voting today.
You're right.
They'll be sending it in. Ah. But basically what the governor wants is for each parish to take money from their budget that's already allocated and implement these stipends. What's going to be cut from Caddo Parish School budget?
Yeah, what really changed the entire dynamics of the whole conversation was what the governor released yesterday. He put out a social media post that basically just said that any district that had provided a pay raise or a stipend that was equivalent to what he was proposing, which was $2,000 for classroom teachers or $1,000 for staff, that we met the intent of the executive order. We have worked with our legislators because, you know, we began, as we said months ago, we've been planning to present the budget that the board's going to vote on tonight. We've been planning this for months. And a part of that is a 6% across the board pay raise for all staff. Well, then the executive order came out. Mm-hmm. And so immediately with the executive order, we started asking lots of questions because really you're looking at three different possible pay scenarios. You've got Caddo Parish proposing a 6% across the board. We also were in conversations with our board, and one of our board members has made a recommendation that we also are going to provide a stipend for our employees that have a starting salary below $30,000 will receive one time $1,500 plus any above $1,000. And now you've got a third initiative here that came from the governor's order. And so what we are asking, and we have asked our local delegates to get clarity, every one of them are coming back saying after conversations with leaders in the Senate and House, as well as the governor's office and the attorney general's office, that we've met the intent of his executive order. So now what we have shifted to, instead of opposing it, because we don't want to oppose, we're for teacher pay. That's why we added it in our budget. Now we are just pushing for written clarification and some protections, because it's not just Caddo. I mean, DeSoto Parish just passed this past I think a week ago, a 6.8 across the board pay raise. Well, they're also going to meet that threshold. Mm-hmm. And so the governor did clarify yesterday. Unfortunately, he clarified it in a social media post. And I just hate to hang my hat on Facebook
right.
rather than something a little more legal. So that's kind of where we are right now.
So it looks like you will have met what the governor wants to accomplish. Because I was worried that if his action passed, that you might actually have to cut your proposed pay raise to give the stipend. I mean, so that's kind of a moot point now. We hope.
Well, it's a semi moot point. I think until we get something other than Facebook, but you know, we have gotten the assurance, and regardless, we can go forth with a 6 point across the board pay raise. I feel very comfortable with our ability. Again, we were going to do that regardless. What we will do is delay the one-time stipend just as a measure of security protection, that in case it is delayed or, you know, he is going to change his mind, then we will have those funds to be able to meet the requirement if he says we have to do that. And I just think that's being prudent with tax dollars, because we certainly don't want to back ourselves into a corner, a financial corner, that we can't get out of.
Okay, let me ask you, because this has been mentioned by, I think, at least one board member who has suggested maybe a 6% increase for all is not the way to go. Maybe the folks that make over $100,000 should get a lesser percentage. Is that feasible?
Yeah, we did look at that. And, you know, I think anytime you're talking about salaries, and, you know, the elephant in the room is my salary or anyone else who's at kind of an executive level in the district, it is an elephant in the room. But our goal from day one is really not looking at just optics. And, of course, we are in election season, which optics we know play a part. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do is really align salaries to what the market demands. And I think if you look at, I gave the example in last month's board meeting of, I was interviewing someone who was at a supervisor's level from another district who was a top quality candidate that I wanted to bring in to lead one of our areas. But even with coming in at a higher position, she was still going to lose money. And she was coming in from, again, a regional district. So that's, you know, talking about salaries are never comfortable, but we always want to make sure that we are aligning ourselves with what does the market show, and not just try to give a one-time stipend or a flat dollar adjustment.
Another elephant in the room for me and for some who talk to me about it is that we have lost students. Our student population is declining. You've talked to us about right-sizing the district and, you know, do we have too many employees? Have you made headway on that? Have we lowered our staff numbers as we have lowered the student populations?
Boy, that's such a, you know, that's a battle I always fight, because there's such this mythology out there that we are so heavy at the top. And as I said I'm so proud of what our staff was able to do. We moved 56 positions out to schools this past year, and we don't get to the point in a general fund budget where you're able to give a 6% raise unless you have adjusted what makes up 85-86% of your budget, and that's people. Mm-hmm. And so we've reorganized central office to a much more leaner, much more efficient, supportive role. We have shifted as many positions as needed to schools, and not that we have to do what's needed, and very proud of that. But also, you know, Aaron, to your point around population shift, one of the things that I think we should be proud of with the work we're doing is we've kind of stabilized some enrollment. We're not seeing the vast declines that we have in the past. But the other thing, we receive MFP dollars based upon enrollment. Mm-hmm. So it's not like that we're getting a static revenue source regardless of what enrollment does. It is a per pupil allocation. And so as populations have declined, so have funding. And because of that, we've made sure that we have budgeted appropriately, so we're good stewards of taxpayers' dollars.
Okay. Final vote on the budget expected today. We'll be watching. We appreciate your time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you all. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Keith.
All right, bye-bye.
101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Well, you've probably heard the B-52 that went down. Where did it go down? Did you see the report? It was
Edwards Air Force
Base. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after takeoff, they're refitting the B-52s with more modern equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this one was being tested with some of that equipment.
Some of the new radar equipment, yeah. There are several reports that this particular plane had spent many, many years at Barksdale. We don't know, you know, were these crew members from Barksdale, were they assigned to Barksdale, or were they transferred to Edwards, where this plane was now located since about last year. There were two Boeing contractors on board. There were 8 killed. 2 of them, Boeing has confirmed, were their employees. They were obviously part of the radar team, you know, with mm-hmm. the new radar system, and they were testing it. But again, I did inquire
because I don't think the B-52 has a crew of 8.
I don't think so. I think you're right about that. I think it's a smaller crew.
Right.
I did inquire whether or not any of the B-52s at Barksdale have been grounded as a result, and it looks like the answer to that is no at this point. They did ground everything at Edwards for a little while. What I'm blown away by, Mike, is if you look at some of the video, the plane is gone.
I saw the crash site, not personally, I saw footage of the crash site, and I was like, where's the plane?
Yes.
It's just scorched earth.
That's a monster plane. You've seen them. How unbelievable. So please keep the Barksdale family, the B-52 families
in your
prayers.
I did get an unconfirmed report that one of the crew members was from Barksdale. Mm. I haven't confirmed that yet.
Right. But, we ain't
that's,
hearing that.
But that's where I'm hearing.
That's Barksdale. We need to keep them in our prayers today. Yes. Definitely.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.